would like to welcome in the Executive Director of the South Dakota High School Activities Association, Dr. Dan Swartos, on the program. It's always good to have you on the program. Thanks for spending some time with us this morning.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. By the time you get to the end there at volleyball, and then we've got Oral and Turp this weekend, it kind of turns into a blur, but it's a great way to spend the fall. We start out with golf in early October and work our way through, golf and tennis to soccer to journalism to cross country and cheer and dance through chorus and orchestra and football, volleyball, and end with Oral and Turp here. So it was a really good fall championship season. We had great crowds and a lot of competitive events. So we're very happy with it.
Anything new that we want to talk about as far as winter sports goes?
Probably the biggest changes were in wrestling, where the NFHS, and then we follow the NFHS rules. So the NFHS has adopted some of the college rules in terms of scoring. So takedown now is worth 3 points instead of two. And then you can get a 4 point near fall as well. And then the out of bounds rule is a little bit different in wrestling where, it used to be you needed, 1 point of contact from each competitor in bounds to be in bounds. And now that is, just 1 point of contact from either wrestler. So if there's a toe in bounds, you're still in bounds and as long as you're still on the mat. So those are going to be the biggest changes that fans will probably notice. There's always a few little changes here and there within basketball and in gymnastics, but nothing really wholesale in either of those. The biggest changes would be in wrestling.
What was the reason for that?
Yeah, I mean, the out-of-bounds rule, it's the way it was written was really it was difficult for the officials to be consistent with it because as an official, you could be checking for near fall outside the circle, but you also have to be trying to look and make sure they're still in bounds, that there's 2 points of contact in bounds from somebody, whether that's one from each or two from one wrestler. Mm-hmm. And now it allows the officials to be a lot more consistent in how they call in and out of bounds, and it's a lot easier to, they don't have to be trying to check two things at once as long as there's 1 point of contact in, and the wrestlers aren't off the side of the mat, they're in. So that will provide a lot more consistency with officiating, and our officials were happy about that. Our coaches were happy about that. The changes to the scoring, it's following what college has done, and college did that to try to spur on some more offense and reward takedowns more than what they had been in the past, and try to induce some more action within the sport.
Of course, we had John probably, maybe about 3.5 months or so ago. And one of the main points, and we spent quite a few minutes talking about the ongoing discussion of moving teams up or down on how well they do or how poorly they do as far as classes go.
Yeah, well, we're getting ready to start that. I mean, I've been doing some research on my end, so I'm ready for when we have put this task force together. But we've got two different studies going on this year. The first one is looking at the concept of a success factor. There's been a number of states who have moved to that in different ways. And that's essentially, we've always used enrollment to establish our cutoffs for classifications in sports and within the fine arts as well. But the concept of a success factor is using your success in addition to enrollment to place teams. I know North Dakota has put it in. They've got it in football, basketball, and volleyball now, I believe. But it's essentially a point system where you accumulate points I think it's like 4 points for winning a state championship, 3 points for making it to the state finals, 2 points for making it to the state semifinals, and it works its way backwards. And if you accumulate so many points over a 2 or a 4 year period, and you're within a percentage of that enrollment cutoff, then you can get moved up. And similarly, and this is probably the one where I'm a little bit more interested in, if you, it goes the other way with a lack of success. If you go a certain amount of time without making the playoffs, or you're not winning games or whatever, there's a petition process to move you down, if you're within that percentage of the cutoff as well, where you can petition down, to the next lower class. And if you, have success down there, then you get moved back up. But it's a way to help schools rebuild programs who are really struggling. So we'll be taking a look at that. That's what North Dakota does. I know Kansas has put in a pretty involved system where it looks at that, and it also looks at population density and saying, you know, if you're I'm not picking on Sioux Falls Christian here, but say you're a Sioux Falls Christian and you're an A school in a metro area of 200,000 people. Well, that's different than an A school in a rural town with 1,500 people in it. So it looks at some population density and adds some factors to your enrollment based on that as well, looking at where you're at. So we'll be looking at all of those sorts of things for that concept and seeing what other states have done and see if there's anything we think makes sense for South Dakota. And then, we've got to, if we find something that we think works, then we've got to talk the membership into it. And that's a tall task also. So we've got our work cut out for us, but it's something that our board has asked us to look into. And then the second one we'll be looking at is just a wholesale review of our transfer rules and seeing if there's suggestions or that we want to make in terms of making changes to those rules.
I was watching Sioux Falls Christian, and I believe it was Miller in the first round of the state volleyball. I don't know if I've ever seen this before. The anti-Sioux Falls Christian posts were so bad. It wasn't anything directed at the athletes. It wasn't anything it was directed at. But it was so anti-Sioux Falls Christian that they had to disable comments.
Well, I just wanted to, we had a problem with that, and a lot of those were bots, I think. SDPB ended up turning those off for state football as well. A lot of them were bots. It was spam-type stuff, and it was – but there was a lot of that other stuff as well. And, and I mean, in the case of Sioux Falls Christian for volleyball, they've had a lot of success in volleyball. And, Del Rapids won the state volleyball tournament this year, and that's the first time someone other than Sioux Falls Christian or Dakota Valley has won state volleyball in, I think, since the mid-2000s. So it's been a long time. They've had a lot of success. And, there is a growing sort of sentiment that way. I'll be honest, I think they get a little bit of a bad rap, and there's a lot of narratives out there about them recruiting and all these kids coming in. And I can tell you, I process all of the open enrollments, all of the transfers that happen across the state. Mm-hmm. And there's very few transfers that are into Sioux Falls Christian. They're getting kids prior to high school is what I can say. They're not getting a bunch of kids throughout high school. I get more transfers to Sunshine Bible every year than I do to Sioux Falls Christian. But I think the bigger thing is what I talked about earlier is to be an A school in the middle of a metro area of 200,000 people as compared to, say a Miller, like you're talking about, who's an A school in a town of a couple thousand people. There's some questions on the fairness with that. And that's one of the things we'll be looking at within this, system that within the study that we're doing. And, so I didn't see any of those comments. I know I talked to SDPB and they mentioned that they've had to disable comments, some of it because of bots and some of it because of, trolls and things like that and people getting on there and saying inappropriate things, which is the first time I would agree. I think that's the first time they've had to do that was this year. But it's a tough subject. And the kids of Sioux Falls Christian are kids like anybody else. And, you hate to see disparaging comments made about kids, no matter where they go to school.
I don't think it was, no one ever said anything bad about the kids or the athletes. It was just kind of the situation. I think the bigger issue, and I'm interested in getting your opinion on this, and one of the things that I've talked about as far as the Sioux Falls Christian goes, and we see it in contrast with a lot of the native schools in South Dakota, if you can afford to send your kids to a private school, you probably have a good amount of money to be able to afford that. A lot of folks cannot afford to send their kids to private school. I mean, I'm not going to exactly break news here. Kids that have parents that have money have more advantages than other kids that don't.
Sure. They've got more opportunities for private lessons and things outside of the season, more community resources, for sure. Yeah, and it's a tricky thing, and some of those schools have, their diocese or whatever, they have some tuition assistance programs for families who can't afford it. I know there's a statewide program now that helps with academic scholarships to some of those schools, and that's K through 12, income-based, needs-based scholarships to attend some of those private schools. But your main point is not wrong, and that's one of the reasons why we did implement a couple years ago a free and reduced lunch factor within our enrollment system, where your enrollment is reduced in relation to the percentage of your free and reduced of your students who receive free and reduced lunch. And you know, in some of our communities, that's 90% to 100%, or all of the kids live in poverty. So those enrollments are reduced, and that has helped keep a couple of our schools, like Lakota Tech, Pine Ridge, Little Wound, Todd County, who were bumping up against that AA level, from moving up into AA and having to compete against Harrisburg and Brandon Valley and communities who in general are quite a bit more affluent and have a lot more community resources available to kids and parents. So, yeah, it's a tricky situation, because you get into the concept of, well, yes, but a student who doesn't, you know, it's also when you get into the concept of, you know, should a student whose parents make less money count less? Mm-hmm. And that's it's a tricky conversation to have, for sure. But that request was brought by our Native American advisory, and then it went out to a vote of our membership, and our membership approved that by 70% to 80%, which I was happy with, and their membership, you know, recognized that, you know, that those differences that occur in the amount of community resources and things like that. So, yeah, it's a tale as old as time, and you know, to be honest, we've avoided a lot of these hard conversations in our state. To be frank, we've avoided it because Sioux Falls O'Gorman has always petitioned up, mm-hmm. and they've always played up into the highest class, and to where there have been times where they could be a class down in football, and they've gotten to that AAA line a few times in enrollment. And you know, if Sioux Falls O'Gorman had been playing AA football or Class A basketball and stuff, we'd probably hear a lot more about it, but we haven't, because they've always opted to play in that highest class. So now we've got some schools who are, you know, in the middle of that. I think Sioux Falls Christian is at 330 students, and the cutoff is 450 for A and AA. So they're kind of in that middle area, and they haven't opted up, which is, you know, that's up to them. Mm-hmm. So now it's that conversation we've had where we've and this happened in probably every state in the country, the same exact conversation, but we haven't really had to address it because our largest private school has historically opted up.
We are spending time with the executive director of the South Dakota High School Activities Association, Dr. Dan Swartus, on the program. It's not just Sioux Falls Christian. I don't want to make this all about Sioux Falls Christian. We had a situation earlier this season. I think the first game of the year, Lakota Tech played Milbank, and that was really painful to watch. You talk about moving schools up, moving schools down. That was, it was cringeworthy to watch them. Part of me just thought to myself, man, I hope these kids don't get hurt.
That's exactly it. And you know, that's what I've said to other people is I'm as much or more interested in the, you know, being able to move teams down if they need it, because we've got teams across every class of football. I mean, there's 9-man teams who go all season not playing beyond halftime because they're down by 50 at halftime in a football game and the game's over and they go home. Sioux Falls or Rapid City Christian and or Rapid City Central and Stevens have struggled quite a bit in that AAA trying to compete with the Sioux Falls schools and Harrisburg and Brandon Valley. There's teams like Belfouche who have struggled in 11A. There's teams or Douglas in Class 11 AA. And there's teams across all classes of football that we have who are in the same boat. And for whatever reason, football seems like once you start that spiral down, that's one of the hardest sports to pull yourself back up. And I think it's because of the number of kids you need. And it's just, for whatever reason, football seems the hardest to be able to right the ship. That side of it probably interests me more than saying, hey, you're good, we're going to move you up. Just to try to give a lifeline to some of those programs, because you struggle for a couple of years and then less kids keep coming out and you struggle more and less kids keep coming out. And it's just sort of a spiral downward. And now we're running into some programs that are showing up, you know, for football in the fall and they've got 8 kids out and, you can't field the football team with that. And then we're scrambling to try to fill schedules or they try to make a go of it and bring some middle school kids up and there's safety concerns with that as well, and you've got teams that end up forfeiting because they don't have enough kids to play, and then the teams that they're playing are losing the game also. So it's not a situation that's good for anybody. Hopefully we can figure something out with that, and I see the other side of that too, where some people will say, well, you just got to put the work in and you got to get better, and I certainly see that, but there's some situations where giving them sort of a reprieve, giving them an opportunity to have some success to build their program back up and then moving them back to where their enrollment would put them might save a program. So
what about a private school multiplier that maybe only kicks in with a certain population, so where you're not punishing the smaller private schools?
There's other states that do that. I think Georgia counts they count every open enrolled student as 3. And a private school doesn't have a district boundary area. Mm-hmm. So every student there is open enrolled. So every student there counts as 3. I talked about Kansas. They've got a really sort of complicated system, but it takes into account private school students. It takes into account, you know, your geography, as we talked about as well. So there's a lot of different systems out there. But you also, you know, North Dakota tried to do a couple of things a few years ago and got sued pretty quickly for discrimination, mm-hmm. for applying rules to only private schools. And it was viewed as, you know, religious discrimination or secular schools and religious discrimination. So there's a lot of landmines within this, you know, politically, legally, on both sides of it. So we got to look at it. We got to be smart as we look at it, and we got to look and see, you know, what's feasible, what's practical. And at the end of the day, what do we think our membership will agree with? Because, you know, I could put something out there saying the sky is blue and you've got 180 different schools, and I'd get 5 of them that would say, well, no, sometimes it's gray. It's gray today, not blue. You know? So, it's sometimes it gets to be herding cats, and you know, so we've got to be smart about it, and we got to get good people on this committee, and I'm working with our Athletic Directors Association to make sure we've got open-minded people on there. And one of the biggest challenges with anything that we do is getting folks to look at it from a higher level perspective, you know, looking at it from higher up, from a state level perspective, rather than how it impacts their school specifically. And what might be good for you isn't good for someone else. And we got to look at it. What's the best thing for the sport? What's the best thing for the kids in the state, not just the kids in my community? So that's always a challenge.
Before we spring, you do want to bring this up. I know you've begun to collect data from state tournaments to gauge the economic impact of those events. Good article, I believe, in the Mitchell paper in early November.
Yeah. I'm trying to pull it up here. We have. We've been doing that for a year now. When we just finished, we started with volleyball last year, and we went through football this year. Just trying to, you know, there's more and more competition, especially in our larger cities, with NCAA events and with, you know, with concerts and what have you. And for better or worse, you know, any event where they can sell alcohol, they're going to make more money than having us where we don't allow that. So we're trying to put some data together to say, hey, we have value too. We might not be as flashy as an NCAA tournament, but this is local people and it's local kids. And so, you know, we've done that, and I have to get football in there yet, but you know, at the moment, our state events from volleyball last year through football this year, not including football, I need to do that, but we found it was a direct contribution to the local economy of over $17 million and $3.5 million in tax revenue that was generated from our state events, and $9.5 million in labor income, 250 jobs that were supported locally. And then as that money flows through the economy, you know, people working there make the money, and then they reinvest it into other local businesses, so that, you know, the total output once everything flows through is nearly $32 million to local economies, you know, from Rapid City and Sioux Falls to Watertown and Pierre and Brookings and some smaller communities around the, or not smaller, but not the two major metro areas in our state. And so we're going to use that and try to, you know, for couple of different purposes. Number one, to make sure that we keep seats at the table and that we're able to continue to use, you know, the best venues in our state to give those kids the best environment possible and really top tier venues to play those state events at. And then the second would be to, you know, re-engage the local chambers of commerce, and nothing's yeah. Just like everybody else, nothing gets cheaper, and things end up costing a lot more money for us, for the schools, and try to re-engage those local chambers of commerce to say, hey, we're bringing in, you know, we've got state wrestling coming here. That brings in, you know, over $4 million to your community in economic activity. You know, is there things you can do for our schools to help with hotel rooms or help with, you know, hospitality, food for the kids or the coaches, or things that we can maybe use that to help save some money for the schools, and to be able to keep our ticket costs down as much as possible. The last thing we ever want to do is to raise ticket prices, but at the end of the day, we don't receive any state funding. We're not a state entity, and about 90% of our budget comes from gate receipts at state events. So if it costs more and more and more, you know, it costs $100,000 plus to put on a state basketball tournament somewhere, where that used to cost $60,000-$70,000, that $30,000-$40,000 has to come from somewhere. So we made the decision to take a year and do that economic impact study, and now we've got the data, and hopefully we can use that to both stay where we've been, and to see what we can do to keep costs down and maybe save some money for the schools as well.